it's time to listen back to the interviews from last week's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you by Placemakers every Saturday from 10 till 12. Over the next hour, we'll hear last Saturday's host Dion talk with Rosalie from the Waiheke Library and talk food with Steve from the Village Butchery. But first she talks to Kevin Glover, another Waiheke Radio volunteer and a copyright lawyer. Kevin discusses impending changes to copyright law and explains that people may be more worried than they need to be.
Okay, joining me in the studio, I have Kevin. Good morning, Kevin.
G'day, Dean. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
What are we going to talk about this morning, Kev?
We're going to talk about copyright law, which sounds like quite a boring thing to talk about, and normally it would be, but there's been quite a bit of controversy about some changes to the Copyright Act. The controversy has flared up over the last week or so, because the changes are due to take place on the 28th of February.
Awesome. Now, I'd heard a little whisper. I actually heard, which I warned my son about, you know, if you've got LimeWire on your computer, it was like, do not use it after the 28th of February or else. What could happen after the 28th of February?
Well, the changes which are being made are effectively to relate to the liability of internet service providers, ISPs. So that's your Extra and your Woosh and whoever else.
Yeah.
The Section 92A of the Copyright Act, which comes into force on the 28th of February, means that ISPs need to have policies which relate to copyright infringement, and specifically they need to have a policy which provides for termination of users who are repeat infringers of copyright.
Yeah.
And so there's been quite a lot of alarm potentially from people who download material which might infringe copyright, but also on a sort of a more conceptual level that the ISPs seem to have assumed that they need to terminate people's accounts following a complaint from a music company or from somebody else who owns copyright.
Right.
And I'm an intellectual property lawyer, and my view is that people have perhaps worried about this legislation more than they should, and I'm not sure quite why that is, but the legislation says that the ISPs just need to have a policy which provides for termination. It doesn't say that if they get a complaint from a music company or from somebody who owns copyright that they need to terminate. And so it seems that the policy could say, well, we require a court order or a declaration from the court that copyright has been infringed before we'll take any action like terminating somebody's account. So it really depends on the line that the ISPs want to take, but a lot of the stuff in the media has been them saying we don't want to be forced to adjudicate on whether somebody's infringed copyright or not. Obviously that's
Exactly, and I mean that would be a huge job. I mean,
and they're not really set up for doing it. You know, the body that decides whether somebody's infringed copyright or not tends to be the court. And the court can get a bit of telly about, you know, people usurping their jurisdiction and trying to decide whether legal liability exists or not. So it seems that they are not suited for doing that job of deciding whether or not copyright infringement has taken place. They don't want to do that job, and my interpretation of the legislation is that they don't actually need to do that job, is that they can just wait for the courts. The other thing is that repeat infringer is the phrase used in the legislation, which the Section 92A defines as a person who repeatedly infringes the copyright in a work. Work is a sort of a term that they use in copyright law, but it just means a sort of a copyright thing, whether it's a song or a book or something else. So it doesn't say repeatedly infringes copyright in multiple works. If you read the legislation literally, it suggests that if you download one song 20 times that you might download it repeatedly and repeatedly infringe. But if you download 20 different songs, it's not clear that you're necessarily a repeat infringer of copyright in a work. And, you know, that's a pretty daft situation. You can't imagine anybody stupid enough to download the same song 20 times.
No.
But it would also apply to somebody who uploads material which then allows, you know, 20 different users to download that song or that TV episode.
Yeah.
So it may be that the legislation was intended to operate that way, but...
Yeah. So how do they get around, like, because LimeWire is like a site that is basically your music sharing, isn't that how they sort of got around, you know, the loop, that was their loophole, basically, so that you could, you know, you could go onto their site and you were sharing your music as...
Yeah. LimeWire is probably not legal.
Yeah.
But the thing is that it involves copyright infringement by a whole lot of different people.
Yeah.
And it's too hard for the copyright owners to sue each individual LimeWire user.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll go for a scalp and they'll, you know, set up fake user accounts themselves or user accounts on LimeWire, get the information about who's been downloading and uploading and use that information to sue somebody.
Yeah.
So this amendment's supposed to be a quick and dirty way of saying, look, this person's been infringing copyright, you need to terminate
their internet.
Yeah, but the problem is that there are lots of variables there. You don't know whether, you know, the copyright is valid, who owns the copyright, whether the person might have a legitimate reason for downloading the copyright material. So there are all these sorts of things that, you know, ISPs can't really decide. That the court should normally decide, and that they seem to be assuming that they do need to decide them.
My gosh, it will make the courts very busy indeed, they're going to need like another police force, just an internet-only internet police.
Yeah, the other thing is that having the courts decide whether copyright infringement's taken place or not is a pretty good filter. It means that, you know, somebody who downloads one or two songs isn't going to be wouldn't ordinarily be the subject of litigation because it's such an expensive process, not only to defend the case but to take the case for the record company.
Yeah.
So you can see why the record companies would want a sort of a quick and dirty way of stopping copyright infringement.
Yeah.
But equally, you've got to balance that against the rights of people who, you know, it's not clear that they have infringed copyright. So should they be lose their internet access as a result?
As a result of that. Because what I find interesting is before the internet, before everyone had the internet, and before CDs, we had records and cassettes. And, you know, like, it was not a problem to record your favourite record and put it onto a cassette or grab all your mates' favourite records and record your own compilation of, you know, 10 different records that you borrowed of somebody. And to me, it's kind of like, I'm like, well, isn't the internet and you kind of, downloading music, isn't that just a bit of a fancier, quicker version? I mean, you get a whole lot more songs and all that sort of thing. But it's kind of like, isn't it basically people are not really, I mean, you know, it is a real shame because musicians are losing out in the end and, well, record agencies are basically. And,
I suppose the thing is that recording to tape some records is probably still copyright infringement. Copyright's a funny beast, and it gives pretty strong rights to copyright owners.
Yeah.
Until there was a specific change to the copyright law last year, which was part of this Section 92A changes, although it came into force earlier, it was an infringement of copyright to download music from CD onto your computer and then chuck it on your iPod.
Yeah.
That sort of format shifting is now legal, but copyright law isn't always in step with what people expect it to be.
Yeah.
So it's a funny old one.
It is a funny one, isn't it?
The way I suppose copyright law survives and people don't sort of protest about it in the streets is that generally it's so much of a hassle for people to sue for copyright infringement that you do get away with stuff which people expect they can do, like, you know, recording their records onto tapes and copying tapes and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But the issue that we're now seeing is that with MP3s, it's very easy to
take a whole lot.
Yeah. For them to sort of scatter to the four winds, and for perfect copies to be made.
Yeah.
When you've made three copies of a tape, dubbed, it sounds like it was recorded in a bath. And
so,
you know, there's kind of a mechanism there that people will not be bothered with doing that. But That's sort of one of the challenges of the digital age for copyright.
God, it's all very interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, so people have been protesting about this Section 92. There was a march on Parliament, and people have been changing their avatars on Facebook to black avatars to sort of protest.
Yeah.
Not sure whether the national government's going to do anything to change the legislation coming into force, but it's sort of a matter of watching what happens over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think the record companies are going to be bothered over small infringers. Hopefully, ISPs.
Who is this going to affect? I mean, like.
Well, hopefully, ISPs get the right end of the stick on what the legislation actually says.
Yeah.
They seem to assume that they need to take a more proactive stance, and that they need to determine whether people have infringed copyright or not. Where, you know, they could, equally take the view that it's up to the courts to decide that sort of thing.
Yeah.
They also don't seem to have picked up on the definition of repeat infringer and what it really means.
Yeah.
So, the other thing is that internet service provider is quite widely defined. It's not just, you know, your telecom and or Extra and any Telstra, Clear and Vodafone and whoever else. It means that people who provide internet services to somebody else, for example a library or an employer, all need to have these policies in place which provide for termination at some stage. It certainly doesn't mean immediate termination, or even people have been saying, you know, it's a three strikes and you're out regime. If you get a couple of warnings, then terminated the next time.
Yeah.
It is completely discretionary, so...
Wow. So you don't think people have to, like, if you're somebody who's, you know, can't afford to, you're a bit of a music fanatic and you can't afford to buy 10 CDs a week, and you've been downloading a little bit of music, do people like that have to worry, or...?
You need to check what your ISP's policy is.
Yeah.
If it provides for, you know... Because it's got so much flexibility, it could provide for instant termination if they think you've downloaded some copyright stuff.
Yeah.
Or it might take a more sort of robust line and say, well, you know.
Yeah.
I think the ISPs have all gotten together, and under the auspices of the Telecommunications Carriers Forum, they've come up with a draft policy which says, you know, basically we'll give you 3 warnings and then terminate your account after that.
Sure.
Which is a sort of a middle ground, but it doesn't... Mm. They've got a different definition of repeat infringer. They've got the sort of definition which suggests that repeat infringer is somebody who downloads copyright in a number of works.
Yeah.
So, yeah, watch the space.
Yeah. Oh, it's all quite... Ooh, it's kind of freaky.
Yeah. I mean, there are... huge issues, obviously, with... I know we're running out of time, but, you know, if your son's downloading stuff on your computer and you don't know what he's downloading, or don't find out until afterwards, or if, you know, you've got a wireless broadband router and...
someone else...
and you haven't locked it down and somebody else downloads stuff, you know, there are lots of issues to work through. So, that is really why it should be up to the courts to decide and to work through these issues and to declare whether you, as the person, have, rather than just being liable for copyright infringement, have actually infringed copyright yourself.
Yeah. Wow. Oh my gosh.
I freaked you out now. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Kevin. That's all really interesting. It's very interesting stuff.
Good, you're welcome.
Keep posted on that.
Dion was joined by Rosalie from the Waiheke Library, who talked about books and rain.
Joining me in the studio is Rosalie from the library. Good morning, Rosalie.
Good morning, Dion. And good morning, wonderful Waiheke. Wasn't that rain just wonderful?
Wasn't it good?
Yes, yes. And it was amazing how different areas of the island got more than others, but I think we all got enough. I know I've got a little rain gauge and I'm at the top of Surfdale and I got 48, but then I was talking to somebody else about 2 o'clock and they are Trig Hill up the top.
Yeah.
And they said they had, let me get this right, 40. And that was by 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So they obviously got a lot more after that.
Okay.
And then somebody came in closer to 5 in the afternoon to the library and said, oh, I've got 60 already. And I thought, wow, that's a lot.
Well needed, I believe.
Yes,
for,
yes.
For
and fortunately, because that, we had that little softening mist rain a week ago, it went into the soil. I mean, the other one just touched it. And if you scraped away a fingernail, it was concrete underneath.
Yeah.
So the gardeners will be out there rejoicing. So if you want gardening books, remember we've got them at the library for when it does rain. Lots of other books too. Now,
yeah, tell us about that book by Paul Auster.
Yes, it's actually one that was recommended to me by one of my colleagues. She said, oh, I found this book so intriguing, Rosalie. It's a story within a story. This chap can't sleep and he makes up stories. And it's actually fascinating and you realise where the link is. And I can't spoil it by telling you what happens, but I'll read the first sentence, if I may, because it shows you the elegance of the writing. I am alone in the dark, turning the world around in my head as I struggle through another bout of insomnia, another white night in the great American wilderness. So I think, yes, it just sort of grabs you from, you can just imagine this person lying there and turning. Because that's what you do so often when you have insomnia. You go over and over and you turn the world around. So this chap, to get out of that circle, makes up stories.
Oh,
and I thought, it's absolutely, it's the size of a novella, but it's sort of a story within a story. So two books for the price of one. Well, of course, they're all free at the library. Paul Auster, Auster, and it's simply called Man in the Dark. Yes.
I'm intrigued already.
Yes, it is. And very easy to read. Very easy to read. Some stories, and this is one of them, are like an onion. You know, you can sort of just peel it and chop it and use it. But this one you sort of want to layer upon layer, and it's quite wonderful. So Man in the Dark by Paul Auster. Now, totally at the other opposite end, so we've had one for the guys, but which everyone will appreciate. But this is one which I think is mainly for women. It's called Peony in Love, a novel by Lisa C. Now, some people will know immediately that Snowflower and Secret Fan was another very interesting book on historical China by this wonderful author. And she's a New York Times bestseller. And Peony in Love, the girl's name is Peony, and she's the daughter of very wealthy parents at a time in China when the Manchus had just crushed the Ming Dynasty. Yeah. And her parents, her mother was extremely strict, and you could tell that there's friction between the mother and the father, and the little daughter adores her father, and he teaches her things, and the mother strongly disapproves because a girl shouldn't know anything before she's married, and here's her father, a scholar, teaching her how to be a scholar and delighting in her thirst for knowledge. Mm. And when it comes to her birthday before she's married off sort of thing, her father puts on this Peony Pavilion, an old Chinese opera. And, of course, it's just delightful. She sees someone there. Of course, all screened off, you know. They're screened off, which allows them to look out, but not to be seen.
Mm.
So it's a story of betrayal and love and despair. And it also goes into the Chinese, at that time, thought of what happened after death and hungry ghosts and things like that. It's quite fascinating, quite different.
Interesting.
And now for my final book today, I've gone to the children's area.
Yeah,
and
this
is called Jake's Best Thumb. Mm. And it's by Eileen Cooper with delightful illustrations by Claudio Munez. Now, this was actually given to me, I was putting it away, by a mother, and she said, that book is wonderful. She said, I'd got on the computer and looked around for stories because she has a child who loves to suck their thumb. And, of course, most parents are very aware nowadays that if the child sucks their thumb for long enough, their teeth become, you know, they end up a bit buck-toothed, or that's the common thought. So this little child, his family try and say to Jake, oh, don't suck your thumb, Jake. And poor Jake, he sticks it out, but he loves his thumb. Yeah. And he manages to do a lot of things while he's sucking his thumb. But, you know, sort of he gets older and he goes to kindergarten. And, of course, somebody calls him thumb sucker. And poor little Jake, he tries so hard to keep his thumb out, especially when he gets nervous. He wants to put his thumb back in his mouth, and this boy teases him and says, thumb sucker. And the poor little Jake. Boy. But Jake gets a friend, and his little friend helps him. And then one time the two of them are playing, and this teasing boy pulls out a handkerchief, and out comes a piece of blankie that he's got. So, of course, then they all become friends and say, yes, they do need comfort. But Jake decides, well, maybe he doesn't need his thumb so much after all for a thumb sucking. But he still sucks it at night. Just a little. So it's absolutely delightful story. And I think mums and dads will enjoy reading that. And if there's anyone who has a problem thumb sucker, can I recommend Jake's Best Thumb?
Sounds great, by Eileen Cooper. Hey, thank you, Rosalie. That sounds great. I'm really intrigued by that first book, Man in the Dark.
I think I might have to whip over to the library.
I'll
put it out for you. Yes. Yeah. And Dion, if you could just remind people that as well as the story time on Tuesday at 10 o'clock, we've just recently started one on Thursday at 10 o'clock as well.
Oh, fantastic. So this story time for the little kiddies?
Yes. 10
o'clock on Tuesday morning and 10 o'clock on Thursday morning
indeed. And it's going very well. We've already got quite a little audience and it's just lovely.
Great.
And it's a lovely way for some of the mums on the island to get to know other mums with young kiddies, which I think is always an advantage.
Yeah.
And if the children grow up seeing each other and then they go to kindy or school,
sounds great. Now, is there a cost for this, or is this
absolutely free?
How amazing are you guys?
Yes.
And who are some of your storytellers?
Most of the staff, like Di and Rhiannon and me.
Oh, yay. Well, there you go. If you're out there and you're listening and you've got some wee ones who absolutely love those story times, get yourself along to the library up here at Artworks on Waiheke. Just in the courtyard, you can't miss it.
It's easy to find.
And get yourself along Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock and also Thursday mornings now at 10 o'clock.
Thank you very much, Dion. And everyone's welcome at the library.
Each week we're joined on Island Life by Steve Hill from the Village Butchery. Last week Steve talked to Dion about how what animals eat flavours their meat. And somehow, he ended up discussing the diet of the Inuit.
Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Warm and sticky. I can't wait for it to rain again.
Can't wait for it to rain again. It's a little bit humid, isn't it?
It's horrible.
Now, this morning we're going to talk about... I had a bit of a question for you when I rang you up about what is the... Like we're going to go back to sort of before the meat becomes something on your table or on your plate, when it's still running around the paddock. And what sort of foods is it best for like your cow or your cows and things to eat? Is it feed or is it grass or is it a certain time of year where it makes the meat better or...
Well, it comes down to basically what the animal is eating, what it's supposed originally sort of grew up eating.
Yeah.
We feed corn to chickens and corn to beef to corn to beef. I've never seen a chicken planting corn to grow to eat, so it's not quite natural. I mean, generally. Chicken is better if it's grass-fed and they can scratch around and eat the bugs and worms and bits and pieces that they find.
Because do you think it changes the flavour of the eggs? If, like, say, if chickens are eating just corn or compared to, you know, food scraps where they've got a good range of everything.
Well, it does. You can change the flavour of a lot of things by what you feed the animals. corn-fed chicken is a prime example. You get a nice yellow, golden colour, but it's not kind of a natural
food source.
If you know what I mean. Certainly with game, I've eaten a few wild pigs that have been caught or shot in pine forests, and they actually taste like what they call Isol, disinfectant,
or
that pine, because they've been eating pine cones and things like that. In parts of France, Italy, they let the pigs out into the orchards, and they eat hazelnuts and things like that, and that actually gives the meat a really good flavour. So it really does reflect on what the animal's eating.
Yeah. So your standard meat that you get at the butcher. Where does it come from, and what would its main source of its main food supply be?
Well, generally speaking, beef and lamb in New Zealand is grass fed, which is basically
standard.
What they sort of evolved to eat.
Yeah.
And a lot of places, especially in the States, they transport them many miles and then put them in feedlots and fatten them up before they actually go through the abattoir.
What do they feed them up on?
Meals made from corn and things like that, like pawny nuts.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you give your horses. Yeah. Basically, it's pelletized grass seeds, etc. They had a brilliant idea in Europe not long ago to actually feed meat to cows, which are essentially vegetarian. And then we ended up with mad cow disease, which made people sick. Didn't do the cows any good neither. So, messing around with things like that isn't necessarily a good idea.
Don't want to mess with nature too much. So you pork and things like that, like pigs, is there much of a choice of the different suppliers who have different food sources for their...
They do, depending on sort of what market they're aiming for. We have chickens, and we all know the battery chicken sort of, they're force-fed, they're kept in little cages, they go from an egg to the table within a few weeks, and they're force-fed all sorts of things.
Yeah.
If they're left to their own devices and they're out scratching around and doing what they're supposed to do, and then you eat them, generally speaking, they are a lot better tasting. But it's a cost thing. People want cheap food, and there's ways of making things cheaper.
Yeah.
Time is expensive.
Yeah.
And if you can grow a chicken in 3 or 4 weeks and get it in the supermarket instead of waiting 6 months before you eat it.
That's scary.
Well, that's the way it happens.
Yeah,
people want cheap food. We can have cheap food.
Yeah.
If you want proper food, you just got to wait for it. It's the same as cooking it. The longer you take to prepare it, the better it tastes.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah. So do you have corn-fed chicken at your butcher?
We do, yes. Yeah. It's a free-range corn-fed one. We also have the Brinks chicken, which is a barn-raised chicken, and they are hormone free. You know, they're not fed a cocktail of things to fatten them up quickly. They're basically your standard sort of cheap chicken. The corn fed ones, free range, they're a bit dearer. Again, there is a difference in flavour. It's what you want, what you want to do, how much you can afford, like everything else.
Well, that's awesome. And I was told too, because I mean, I don't know that much about, you know, like, you know, the meat side of things, but is veal, this might sound really blunt, is veal the calf meat? Is it calf meat?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, so that's just, they're still fed on milk and it's before they are weaned, and so it's...
Yes.
Is that right?
That's, I don't know whether it happens so much in New Zealand. When we have veal, they're basically bobby calves, but certainly Europe, the veal is milk fed.
Yeah.
They keep them inside. They don't eat grass. They probably never even see grass.
Yeah.
Never even see the sunshine, actually. So that's why the, you know, the meat is very pale. And it's milk fed. Yeah. I always found it a bit tasteless somehow, but by the time you finish messing around with it, you might as well have just had a...
Well, like you were saying before, it's all in the preparation. And if, you know, you want to take the time to cook something a bit slower for a bit longer, then it can just make all the difference.
It does, yeah.
So what's... Give us your favourite recipe for making the most of your meat... What would be a good recipe?
Depending on the time of year, I am a big fan of roast beef. I'm English, so I can't avoid that.
Yeah.
Roast beef, Yorkshire pud. Winter time, I really do like stews, slow braised, the cheaper cuts of meat, steak and kidney pudding, that sort of thing. Big, heavy, hearty winter food winter. Summer, a little bit, you know, lighter. It's got to be seasonal, I think. You can eat basically whatever you want year-round. Vegetables aren't seasonal anymore. You can get winter vegetables in the middle of summer and summer vegetables in the middle of winter. But I would tend to go for the seasonal food, and you know, if it's winter and it's cold and it's wet and it's miserable, you want something a little bit solid and warming. But in summer, when it's warm, light. You know, barbecue stuff, I suppose.
Yeah, for sure.
That would be... in summer, I don't tend to eat a lot anyway. It's just too warm.
Yeah.
Not that I need to eat a lot anyway. I should probably go down to Antarctica for the winter and swim north in the summer.
Do you reckon? Oh, you'd miss your meat down there. Mind you, they all kind of eat... Like the Eskimos, the Inuit people, eat... They're quite predominantly meat.
They've probably never even seen a vegetable.
Yeah, exactly. predominantly meat and fish.
They eat meat and fat.
Yeah.
You know, so obviously vegetables, they do eat. There are certain parts where they can get fruit in the very brief sort of summer. They get blueberries and things.
Yeah.
And they do eat them, but mostly they eat the seal and things like that. So it's essentially a meat carnivorous sort of diet.
Therefore, you meat lovers out there, maybe. Head to the cold and join the Inuit people. Hey, thanks, Steve, for coming in and chatting to me about that.
Not a problem.
And we look forward to you joining us on the Island Life show again next Saturday morning.
Okie dokie. Awesome. Cheers. See you then.
You've been listening to the interviews from last week's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues, brought to you by Placemakers every Saturday morning from 10 till 12. And these interviews are available for download from our website, www.waihekeradio.org.nz.